Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 4th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Nice to be back. Spending, what, 10 hours in the car with you is kind of stressful.
Yeah. I think even spending 20 minutes in a car with me is stressful. Or spending 10 minutes in a car with you is stressful, so.
You know, I just know that you're the type of person that can't, like, walk and chew gum at the same time, so when we're driving and you're, you know, basically, it's a standard car, so you have to shift and answer the phone and steer and drink your Diet Coke. I mean, really, it's, I'm just white-knuckling it, and I'm not even holding the steering wheel. But it's worth it if I don't have to drive. You know, I mean,
that's true. Well, we did make it to Jacksonville back safely, and we have, as always, lots of stories from the road to regale our listeners with during the main topic, and including some hands that we played. But I got to start the show off, Chris, with wondering aloud about the worst hand of poker ever played.
Okay. We have a candidate.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that of the top 10, 7 of them are Scott Long hands. But certainly not number one now. Our good friend Will C, all the way from Perth, Western Australia,
man,
had to share with us a hand that he played online. And he didn't play it that badly. Well, what people judge that. But obviously, his opponent played it worse. We can at least agree on that, I think.
Okay.
And so I just kind of want to share it here so folks can feel better for all those bad hands that they've played in their lives, that there's always somebody out there ready to play it worse. All right? You ready for this?
I am ready. What's the game and limits and stuff?
All right. It's a limit hold'em game, $0.50 online. And our hero is dealt the three of hearts, four of spades.
Okay.
Monster hand, right?
Yes.
This is a hand you want to be jamming the pot with anytime you get it, right?
Yep. All
right. Well, you know, every once in a while you get a little frisky at the table, don't you, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Every once in a while you're like, you know, I'm just tired of folding.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, maybe I can outplay him here. You know, maybe I got position, boom, boom. I don't care what my cards are. Right?
Right.
I have a feeling that's where Will C came in with this hand because, mockingly saying that 3-4 of the nuts, obviously it's a hand that has almost zero value in the limit game. But he felt a little frisky here, so he got involved in a hand with 3-4. You know, hey, I'm going to take a flyer. I'm going to see the flop, right?
Was he, like, in a blind or something at least to help, justify this?
Yeah. It looks like he's in a blind, and it was raised, and he had a couple collars. So he's like, you know what? All right, I'll take a flyer. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll come ace, deuce, five, right?
Right. You never know.
It only cost me 50 cents. You know, that's one day of helping a kid in Ethiopia.
Oh, man.
And so he takes the call, and the flop comes king of diamonds, five of diamonds, three of clubs.
Oh, made a pair.
Hey, at least paired up, right?
Yeah, it's hard to do.
Yep. And in a backdoor straight drop, you want to get really crazy.
Yeah.
But I think we're already crazy enough as it is in here. and then this is, the problem with limit. You know, he checks, and then there's a bet, and, you know, hey, I've got a piece of it, Chris.
Yeah, you can't let it go now.
Not a piece. It's only even 50 cents. Let's see. You know, who knows? Maybe he'll come another three.
Yeah, it was
maybe
a raised pot.
Four. Right. There's always hope, right? So he makes the call, and the turn comes to king of spades. Wah, wah, wah.
That actually improves our hand.
Well, yeah, now we've got two pair.
Yeah, I mean, it proves our kicker.
All right, well, he checks again, and it's bet, and it gets back to him. And you know what? Every once in a while, Chris, you're like, you know what? I think, even though it's online, I can tell that guy is opening the Oreo the wrong way. And I think I'm going to tell him, you know what? I'm the one that has the king. Quit your little dog and pony show. I'm going to shut you down right here, right?
Yep.
So we raise, of course, right?
Yep.
We get a caller. Oh, no. All right. This is going to be tough. Now we're to the river. We've committed our kids' college fund to this hand now. We've got a pair of threes with a four kicker. Actually, not even a four kicker anymore.
Now
right?
It's five kicker. Or it's a, well, yeah, it's five kicker now, yeah. Kings and fours with a five.
All right. So now, you know, we'll see what the river brings and, you know, maybe see if we can Houdini ourselves out of this hand.
Yeah, it was kings and threes with a five. Sorry. I don't want anybody calling me up later and say, you said kings and fours. You were wrong. Yeah, it's kings and threes with a five kicker now, okay?
Oh, don't worry. They'll call you and say you're wrong about something.
It's the worst hand, and it was the worst analysis of the hand, too.
All right, well, the river comes, and it's the five of hearts, Chris.
Oh, my God. Now we have a four kicker and a two pair on the board.
Yeah. So, you know, again, our final board is two kings, two fives, and a tray, which means our four is the only part of our hand playing now. At this point, it's when I usually start giggling at home, going, all right, this is why you don't get cute and live it older. But, you know, hey, it was fun, whatever. I'm like, all right, well, you know, I've set up this ruse, right? So I got to finish it off. I'll bet the dollar, you know, you never know. Sometimes people forget and limit that you're not supposed to fold on the river. Our hero bets out. And guess what, Chris? He doesn't get raised. He just gets called. So then, of course, you know, you're like, all right, it's that time for me to go to the bathroom, make a sandwich, get a beer, because obviously my four high is not going to win this hand, right?
Right.
And imagine the amazement on Will C. from Perth, Australia's face when the pot is pushed his way, Chris.
Oh, man.
Shocked. Amazed. He goes to the hand history. His opponent.
It's only, yeah, it can only be one of two hands, right?
Deuce of hearts was playing the board.
Oh, my God. 2-2, deuce, ducks, 22, catch 22. What are you doing? Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
All right, so, you know, we've all made mistakes on the end, so I'm not going to make fun of our villain here too much here because I've done even stupider stuff than this. But it's just a reminder, I thought, when it came in that, hey, you've got to pay attention to what the board is here, all right? At this point, I mean, if that three on the board was not a three, it was higher, then, yeah, maybe you can play the board and you can split. But a three, there's really only what? There's not even a hand out there. You gotta hope your opponent has a two.
Well, we bet because we were you know, representing. The other person called. They must have not realized there was another pair on the board, or that, you know,
exactly.
They just were a real beginner and didn't know that their pair could play or couldn't play. You know, but that's pretty
hilarious. That this hand was making this call, hoping he could get half the pot, and he was up against deuce
or deuce tray
or deuce tray. It was the only two hands where he could split the pot. No possible hand where he could win this pot.
Wow. That is one of the worst hands ever.
Now, what's interesting, though, is if our villain here would have raised, you know, you can't see us throwing away another dollar, right?
Yeah, no way. No, because we at least were a quality opponent and were aware of the fact that we had to bluff. To represent, knowing that we weren't going to win this hand. So, yeah, I don't think we're calling. The other person called because they didn't know what they were doing.
So, folks, I just put that on the show. I thought it was funny from Will just to remind you when you're playing, make sure you're reading the board and that you don't call off all your chips with a pair of deuces.
You, too, can win $11 not knowing what you're doing. Wow, that was incredible.
Easily probably in the top 10 now, right?
Oh, easily. Easily.
All right, well, you know, hey, we're going to we can't just laugh and guffaw at a great submission like that. So, Will, we appreciate you sending that in. And we're going to make that this week's mailbag and send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. And, folks, send us your questions, your other craziness to podcast@iniatmagazine.com, and you too may get some wonderful swag.
And we promise we won't rank it in the top 10 of worst hands ever played.
Yeah. We'll take the rankings away now. And, I mean, it's going to be a pretty high bar at this point after that one.
Yeah. Well, our regular season of Apes has wrapped up. And
talk about bad hands.
Talk about bad years. But a familiar name, a former winner from the past, Hef Mike, our good friend from the Times when we used to work there back in the day. He wins his first Nanner of the 2010 series. That was his fourth overall, right?
Yeah, I believe it was his fourth total. And, you know, he was at my table for a little bit just bemoaning that this just has not been his year, Chris.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say, yeah. You want to see how many times I've cashed this year, Hef Mike? I'm 0 for 23 this year, or 0 for whatever it was. How many are Didn't cash at all this year, Chris. Not one cash.
Sorry, bud. I actually finished 25th, so I was in the top 25. I mean, it felt pretty good.
I'm sure I'm in the top 200 or 500, or probably not even close to that.
He outdueled Twiggy07 for the last seat in our Tournament of Champions, and it was pretty much a star-studded final table. A lot of banana winners. And you impressed me, buddy. I gotta admit, because of course you needed a miracle to stay alive, but you were almost out like, I don't know, half a dozen times, and somehow you survived. You know, like my old baseball coach used to say, you're hanging like a snot. And I thought that was pretty impressive. Here I am, chip leader of the tournament, and you're last in the tournament at one point. I thought, wow, I'm on top, Scott's on the bottom. This is it's pretty weird. But you ended up outlasting
me. That's the way of saying it.
Yeah, I know. but you outlasted me. I was impressed. Somehow you made a nice 7 hand when I had a pat 8-5. Otherwise, you were gone.
Love deuce of 7.
And then later on, my nemesis, Rice F88, you know, I think he has the record for knocking me out of the most tournaments in Apes history.
that should be a little stat that Geek can add to a massive database now.
It was funny because early in the tournament, we were battling together at the table, and I was taking a lot of hands off of him. And then at the end, when I got moved to his table again, there was one hand where we were in stud. It was like stud 8, and he called my all-in. I'd gotten it all-in because I'd had a brutal beat earlier in Raz or something. And so he called my all-in, and he's like, I'm on a draw. And I'm like, I know you're on a draw. We're typing it back and forth to each other. And he was on a draw for a flush, and he made his flush, but I had boated. So I was like, all right. So he doubled me up. I'm like, all right, I'm still alive. And then, like, two hands later, I have pocket heads and, like, a 4 showing or a 3 showing. I can't remember. And or something of that nature. And he has an 8 showing. So I complete because he had to – I think he brought it in or something. So anyway, I completed it, and he called my complete. And then I make 2 pair, and then I make a boat on, like, 5th Street. And I'm betting with him, and he's betting with me, or something of that nature. And then at the end, I get it all in, and he goes, types in, Chris, Chris, Chris. And I'm like, what? I mean, you can't beat me unless you have quad eights. And, of course, quad eights. So it takes quads to get me out of the 8-game mix. And I went out with 14th. I mean, what the hell? I mean, really? I have tens full, and the only hand I could possibly lose to is eights quadded, and he quads his eights. I mean, come on. He's just got my number. It's just destiny for me not to beat him when it absolutely matters. So I was pretty upset about that, but I was happy. That would have been a great story if you'd cashed.
Yeah, you know, I nursed that short stack, and I need to remind the listeners, I was doing it by not pushing every positive EV situation that came up, just pushing the most EV positive EV situations that came up. That's my style, not everybody's style, but it worked for me. I was the short stack, I think, with 28 left, and ended up running it all the way to 10th. And it's funny because you mentioned that you were dealt an 8 right off the bat.
Yeah, 8-5 Delta.
Long time ago in this tournament against me. That's a monster deal in deuce to 7.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are going to have to draw against you, and I, of course, drew to a straight on my second draw. which for those of you out there not familiar, Deuces 7, not good. You don't want the straight. And what's worse about the straight, Chris, is then you got to decide which card to dump.
Yeah.
So I dumped it, and boom, hit the perfect card. Got my deuce.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is you're putting
your
whole tournament.
I can tell you're crying. You're like, there's no way. There's no way
there's
I can
no way.
Lose.
There's
I'm
no
down an eight.
And the two things about it, too, is that there were two other people in the hand, so they're all trying for the same cards as you, and likely they have a deuce in their hand because they're quality players and they know you shouldn't play a deuce of seven hand for all your chips without a deuce in your hand. Here's Scott drawing for one on the last draw. It doesn't have a deuce. I'm like, oh, my God. And he makes a seven, and no one else, of course, beats my eight. But I don't think I had a – I think I won a little bit of a side pot. I don't know. But you – oh, my God, that was incredible. I'm like, oh, my God. It figures, you know. And then you really just took it from there. But I think you were still in danger a little while after that, and then you still kept just nursing it and then got it back for a while.
Yeah, I kept building it up a little bit. But, you know the karma of all this, of course, the hand I go out on, second draw, I draw to a straight again.
That damn
and
six,
man. I was
just
so lucky the next time. On the last draw, I did get another deuce, but it was another deuce. And boom, I'm out. And we talked about this a little bit. You know, there's times when there's hands when you know this is the hand I'm going out of a tournament on.
Yes.
But you're powerless to do anything about it because there's just so many people in. You're like, all right, I got 3-0. I'm in the big blind. You know, miracles happen. I saw the USA Russia match back in the '80s. I'll take a shot, but I just knew I was gone after that. So I thought about this a little bit more. I don't know. Obviously, I don't spend a lot of time studying Deuce to Seven, but I know at least I know enough that you're not supposed to be drawing to a straight.
Right.
But I guess what I got to figure out, and I wonder what you do, is when you have, let's say, you start with 4 to a straight. Do you throw away one of those low cards with the other card and draw two?
No. Because I'm assuming the example you're doing is either 3-4-5-6-7 or 2-3-4-5-6.
Yeah,
see,
it's like
right?
a 3-4-5-6.
Yeah, and, like a 3-4.
Let's say 3-4-5-6 king, right? Obviously, you're going to get rid of the king.
Right.
But do you also get rid of like the 4, hoping that you hit a deuce or a 7?
I don't think so. I think that, because I think if you're drawing, I guess it also depends on your other players, which we always say in poker, it depends.
True,
but,
true.
But if you see them drawing two, you know, if you're in position like you're supposed to be when you're playing this hand, then no, because you hit an eight, it's going to probably be good against somebody drawing two, especially if you show pressure, and then it's the double bet after that. So I don't think so. I think that you would throw away the king and draw to the eight. And if you did make your straight, you're throwing one away anyway. Because, you know, would you rather throw away two cards and try to make a two cards? You know what I mean? Or would you rather make the straight, then decide to throw away the six?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
True,
so,
very true.
So I think that you still just throw a one away and hope an 8-7 holds up, you know, or, you know, whatever. I mean, if you threw away two, then you're drawn two, and then all of a sudden you've given up. Oh, everyone knows that you've thrown away two, so now if they improve, they're going to bet into you, or, you know, whatever. Whatever depends on what position you're in. So I don't think so. I think you keep the four cards and... You know, or you just fold it because you know you shouldn't have left it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, even in regardless of what you got to do, you got to be careful in that situation anyhow.
Exactly.
Not get into a big raising war. But, well, our Tournament of Champions is coming up on Saturday, February 5th. 20 of the best, Chris.
Yes.
Are coming back. They're battling for free $500, compliments of our great sponsor, PokerStars. And I'm going to be out of the country, so I probably won't be able to watch it, but I know a lot of people are going to want to tune in and watch this to see who to wins this. But there's another competition going on as well. It's our Player of the Year. And Edward M., who won like the first 20 of the 24 bananas, held on by a nail to top Poker Geek for the title. Going to have Edward on the show here in a couple weeks when we get ready to announce the schedule for Apes 6. And by the way, we're taking suggestions for Apes on the forum, antiapmagazine.com/forum. So go there and let us know what you want to see in Apes. But right now, Poker Geek called in, and he wanted to congratulate his good friend, Edward. It's very nice. Very sportsmanlike of him.
I'm just calling to congratulate Edward M. on winning Player of the Year. I did my best to catch up, but I just couldn't manage to do it all season long. And he really deserved to win Player of the Year. Congratulations.
That's class right there, buddy. That's class.
Yep. Class with a capital CL.
It was a good year. It was an exciting year. I know you didn't cash, but I mean, it was still, and even though we had some of the problems with the free rolls and things like that, it was nice to introduce two a month, you know, two events a month, get more people to play, and I think we're going to try to make six just as special. You know what I mean? It's something we like to give back to our listeners, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll certainly see what we can do. I'm looking forward to it, and final thanks to Poker Geek for all his work he's done on that statistic site. It's absolutely, truly amazing.
It is incredible. Yeah, we really
appreciate it. You got the silver medal in the Apes, Poker Geek, but you got the gold in
our hearts.
Apes statistics. All right, and then one little other piece of housekeeping before we go on to the rest of our fantastic show. Our cruise, Chris. I know people are getting sick of hearing about it. But Royal Caribbean called us up and said, hey, you know what? We're cutting the price.
Nice.
And I'm like, thank you. That's awesome. So we're passing on that the reduction to you. It's now just $4.99 a person based on double occupancy for the March 7th to 12th cruise. That's a tremendous value. That's only about $130 for that extra night. It's five nights rather than the four nights for our one coming up in August. Much nicer ship. So if you're waiting at the last minute, guess what? You're actually rewarded this time.
Yes.
And, of course, if you booked already, we're going to be refunding your money as well, too. But go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise or give me a call at 727-331-4335 today. And book, we have just 10 cabins remaining now at that price. So even though you waited the last minute, you don't want to wait to the last second.
Absolutely.
Call
Absolutely.
Somewhere between the last minute and the last second.
Everybody loves a discount. Hey, we're going to have some feedback here.
Absolutely.
So everybody stand away from your amplifiers because we don't want your ears to pop. But this comes from Bernice Q. And since it has something to do with Destiny, I guess I'll read it because I was destined to read this. If you were destined to get those two cards you didn't get due to a misdeal, the two cards you get in the new deal will also not be your destined cards, right?
Yes, you're right. I love Bernice. She's awesome.
The destined hand is now an impossibility, at least for some, if not all the players in the hand. So should it be fixed by keeping the misdealt hand that thwarted Destiny, or be replaced by a totally new deal that equally thwarts Destiny? Or, to take a more scientific approach...
It's like Inception.
It's like Inception. No, it's like, where did the chicken or the egg? I mean, that's the thing here. What came first? Scientific approach, how do you know that your Destiny was not... to get the second deal all along. Remember, on Star Trek, when they know in the future the ship will explode and they know they have to avoid it. You know, somehow I'm not surprised that Bernice Q is a Trekkie.
Why? Anyway. Why some people are a Trekkie?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know what she's talking about, so there you go. I had sex in high school. All right. Let's see. They know they'll have to avoid it, but don't know if they can avoid it by sitting still or moving forward. Their attempts to avoid disaster may well be the very thing that causes the disaster. Yeah. Clearly, Destiny is a critical factor in poker. Along with calculating my M and Q, Bernice Q calculates her Q. I calculate my D, which tells me if I'm destined or not to cash, thereby taking the pressure off of me to play well. Thanks for addressing this issue on the best poker cast on the planet, and keep up the good work. Very interesting. Very interesting. I agree with
destined to have bad destiny. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. It's funny because the destiny thing actually struck me on this road trip, and we'll be talking about that a little later on. It's something that I'm not exactly sure if it was the destiny for me or someone else. I don't know, but yeah, I understand what she's saying. But and it's true. It's like if your destiny was to get those cards, but I don't really think of it as destiny. I just mean that's the deck I'm supposed to play it the way it is, and. I mean, I know
but everybody else calls that Destiny.
Yeah, whatever. So, hey, you screwed it up, then you got to screw it up for everybody. If mine's screwed up, then theirs have to be screwed up, too. That's how I look at it.
Well, we always like hearing from Bernice Q. And we also heard from another old friend, Tom McDonald, a.k.a. Mac Daddy.
Haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah. Well, some of these folks, it's quality over quantity. Of submissions to the Annie Up Show.
Very nice.
And Mac Daddy here took some time. He actually hit the quantity. He tried to call the hotline, and he kept messing it up, he said. Couldn't get it down in a minute. First of all, major points for abiding by the one-minute dude.
Yes.
And so he went and recorded himself, still kept it under a minute. And you know what? I got to say, I don't know how many times he took him to do it, and we'll talk about how many times it took us to get stuff done on TV this week later on. But Tom, you knocked this one out of the park.
Good day. This call is for my favorite podcast hosts, whom I fondly refer to as Mr. Chris King Cobra Cosenza and Mr. Scott the Mad Mongoose Long. Yes, this is Rudyard Kipling here, and I just wanted to assuage Scott's fear of legal retribution for using the title of one of my favorite short stories, Ricky Tikki Tavi, in your most recent broadcast. Much better than that term bingo, bango, bongo, anytime. Quite. I do have one request, though. I know that you have an in-house bard, one Mr. Michael Fasso, I believe. I would be greatly appreciative if you might be able to persuade him to do a reading of my poem, If. Its theme is definitely applicable to the great game of poker, and I'm sure your audience might enjoy a listen. Well then, boys, tea time here in the UK. Gotta run. Cheers.
That is just brilliant.
What an accent!
That is brilliant!
He should go out and record some music now with that.
Oh, man, that was just hilarious. And, you know, we're going to work on getting Fasso on the show, too. So
Yeah. We had a couple other people suggest that, you know, as we look for a replacement for the one-minute mystery, that the Fasso was a good suggestion. So we'll talk to him, see what he wants to do, see if he wants to answer the call to his nation to be on the show. And in the meantime, I am totally going to use Ricky Tikki Tavi from here on out.
Oh, my God.
All right, well, Tom, this was this week's hotline. You don't get any swag, but because you've already gotten swag, although it's so cool, I might think about changing my mind and double swagging you on this one.
But, you know, it's like last week we said minute to win it. Now he did it, but it doesn't win it. minute to not win it. Sorry, Tom.
You could do everything right and still lose. That's one of the axioms. But everyone else, though, if you call our hotline at 813-448-1120, we will send you some swag, including maybe something like a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Antioch.
Well, we talked about what we would do to sort of fill the spot. Notice how I didn't say replace. Fill the spot left void by our good friend Columbo. And last week we brought up a call to four, which you know, has our good friend and poker room manager Jody Russell answering the questions for us. So we got another one this week. You want to read it, and I'll do Jody, or you know, whatever. What do you want to do?
I'll let you do Jody.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm going to go ahead and read the wonderful email that we got from Tony from New Jersey. So Tony writes in. He says, I was playing in a $65 no-limit hold'em tournament in Atlantic City this weekend. When this happened early in the tournament, a gentleman in seat 9 goes all in with 3 players left to act. Player 1 folds, and as player 2 thinks and folds, it's announced that the 10-minute break will start at the end of this hand. Upon hearing this, the gentleman in seat 9 stands up, moves to the back of his chair, puts on his jacket. The player in seat 8, last to act, asks the dealer if his hand is folded. The dealer calls the floor over, situation is explained, and the floor says that if this was a cash game, his hand would be folded, but she was not going to eliminate a player from a tournament for standing up to put his jacket on before the break. The guy pressed her, asking if that was the official rule, and Tony wants to know, what's the skinny in a casino on getting out of your chair when you're in a hand at a poker table?
Okay, well, Jody says that floor person was 100% correct, in his opinion. Obviously, there is a house rule they follow in cash games that they don't apply in tournaments. Great call, he says. Tournament Director 101 teaches us to never allow an all-in hand to be killed. It must remain live and must be given an opportunity to win. If we don't follow this procedure, maybe you get all in with your brother, father, neighbor, etc., and stand up so they'll kill your hand and give your colluding partner all the chips. Shouldn't happen. TDA rule number 22 states, a player must be at his or her seat by the time all players have been dealt complete initial hands in order to have a live hand. Notice it does not say in your seat. It says at your seat. Is standing behind your chair at your seat? Sure. Do we want to take cheap shots at players and kill a hand simply because the player stood up? Absolutely not. Some places do have a meet in the seat rule. I love that.
Yes.
that one should not be ignored in this situation.
That one should be ignored.
Oh, that should be ignored in a situation. Well, I said not, I'm sorry. Should be ignored in a situation. Players like to repair when the break rolls around. That's understandable. They also need to stand and stretch sometimes. If they are doing so next to their chair, they should be dealt in and have a live hand. Remember, we do what's in the best interest of fairness. The at-your-seat rule is to prevent people from running across a tournament floor screaming, "Time!" trying to get to their cards. This causes accidents. The rule isn't in place to unfairly knock a player out of a tournament. And you know what else, too, Scott? Rule number one says that they are allowed to interpret or to do whatever they need to do to make it fair, too.
Right.
So ultimately, that's what this person did on top of it anyway. So, you know, I agree 100%. The person standing behind his chair right there in front of his cards. You know, how many times you see on TV the guy's all in, stands up and is walking around, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, coughing and hacking. What's this guy? Because you're still to act, he's dead? That's not right. It doesn't make any sense
at all. I mean, sometimes we've seen it in the World Series where they walk around the entire studio.
Yeah.
Or the World Poker Tour and go over and talk to their dads and
stuff.
I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
Hey, I can't watch. And they go in the stands and all that. Of course, this guy's not going to have his hand.
Yeah, that stuff's ridiculous. But obviously, I mean, getting up to put your coat on because you got to run clear across the casino because the casino didn't think about putting convenient enough bathrooms to you and give you only a 5-minute break so you don't have a chance to go take a wee-wee? Absolutely. I totally get this. And the other guy on the table, he should be forced to not go to the bathroom for the next hour.
That's fair.
Yes. For slowing down the other guy's urination cycle.
Oh, my God.
I'm serious. Oh, I'm just so frustrated.
You're serious. I'm serious. I really want them to strap the guy down.
Yes. Yes.
Give him a catheter.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is this other guy, you know, obviously he's asking for a ruling. I am never going to begrudge anybody a ruling. But a ruling, when you're trying to get a ruling here over something that is so innocuous, you cross into Deutsche Bankery.
Right, this is exactly when people write in and ask what an angle shoot is. This guy is just trying to win a pot for free without having to do anything.
Right.
He saw that. He saw his opportunity. He thought, you know what? I might get a floor person who's timid or a floor person who doesn't really know all the rules and might see in my favor. And right before the break, I'm going to pick up, like, you know, 10 extra blinds or whatever, you know. And that's all this was. It was Deutsche Bankery.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Well, remind folks. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We'll remind folks that we have a great Call the Floor sub-forum on the antiantmagazine.com/forum. Go there, post your Call the Floor, or email us at podcast@antiantmagazine.com. We'll pass it on to Jody, and if we get a good response, or actually if we get any response, because all responses are
hopefully we will get a response from Jody.
Yeah.
So ask them to do it for us.
We'll be happy to put it on the show, and so you can act smarter when you're at the table.
Plus, if you're in Jersey, that means you can pick up a copy of the magazine, and you might actually see your ruling in there. So all good reasons to send us something. You know, while we're gone, there's always news when we're gone. You ever notice that? When we're here, and we're like, what are we going to put on the news desk? We've been sitting around all day on our computers. But when we go on the road, always some good stuff happens. So I can't wait to hear what happened this week on the Ante Up news desk.
All right, Eric Seidel bested 19 other players, including Phil Ivey and Tom Dwan, to win the $250,000 buy-in super high roller event at the Aussie Millions.
God.
Seidel banked $2.5 million for this win. A week before this victory, he locked up third place in the $100,000 buy-in mere mortal high roller.
I can't believe they got 20 people to do it.
$250,000. I mean, I think we were joking, too. Remember back when they started the $50,000 at the World Series?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, like 5 times the main event. And then we were talking to some pros, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna try to get some backers for that. I'm like, how many backers do you got to get for a $250,000 buy? 20 people did it.
You got to get 250 people to give you a grand. I mean, that's even that.
Getting Annette, and she just graduated from preschool. $250,000.
That is crazy. All right. Well, breaking news here on Ante Up. Despite news sources confirming that Gabe Kaplan would be back for Season 7 of High Stakes Poker, Ante Up's trusted sources have said that he has been fired despite just 3 weeks from the show making its February 26th debut on GSN, which apparently replaces Mr. Cotter with another funny a-hole. That was the quote I heard. Apparently Gabe Kaplan is gone, and we don't know who's replacing him. But if you search Google, people will be saying that he's coming back for Season 7, and that, in fact, is not true. So now my wife will no longer have a TV show to fall asleep to because it was Gabe's voice that knocked her out. She was so bored. But I feel bad. I feel bad. Gabe Kaplan gone. Now who's going to replace him, Scott? Speculation?
I'm going to say Ward Cleaver. Is he still alive?
I don't think he's still alive.
Shoot, he's going to be tough to sign to a contract then.
I'm going to say it's going to be Isildur 1.
All right, we'll wait and see for official confirmation from GSN on this. But it's nice to know that we have folks out there in the know that are sharing their whispers with us. Yes. I feel like TMZ today.
Yes, yes. I feel like we should have put something on our forum, you know, on our forum or on our news site or something too about it, but maybe we will after this.
All right, well, finally, Chris, giving new meaning to the term drawing dead, Asia One reports that a survey from a Chinese federal agency found that 5 of 30 tested playing cards were found to have above normal levels of formaldehyde. The agency urges players not to use cards that have a, quote, uncommon chemical odor.
Not what? What does that mean?
Hey, whoa, did someone just let something rip? Oh, no, those are the cards. Oh, okay, thanks. Maybe we shouldn't use them.
I have to admit, though, a few of the plastic decks that I have, when you open the case, they do smell bad.
I am not using them. You know, I would drop them off at your local funeral home, let them put them to good use there.
Can you imagine that? All of a sudden, they dig up the body, you know, because they detect foul play. And they cut open the body to see if they're like if there were poison in their liver or something. And they find like plastic playing cards in the body used as formaldehyde to preserve the body.
Oh man, well we're having a lot of fun here, but there's a health concern. I mean, obviously you don't want elevated levels of formaldehyde in you until the appropriate time in your body's existence. but it's just 5 out of 30 testing. So I always get a little freaky when I see these surveys because the testing is all hey, I found one card who's bent. All cards are bent. You know, it's all relative. So.
This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, Chris, you survived your white knuckle trip to Jacksonville and back. I appreciate you hanging out with me and checking out the trees on the drive up. That's always part of the fun.
Yeah, well, now you apparently are fascinated with birds. You know,
birds are far more fascinating than trees. I think I can get a hell yeah from all of our listeners. Yeah. Out there. But we got on the road. Went up to Orange Park Kennel Club near Jacksonville, Florida. For the second time in the year, we were hired to do the TV ourselves and the great crew at Fallow Productions and Kirk Fallow, the folks that bring the Windy City Poker Championship to Chicago airwaves. And so we went back up again and did it all over again this year, Chris. And I got to say, this year, as much fun as last year was, this year was twice as fun, wasn't it?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And it was kind of cool. It was like, it's so weird because we don't go there that often. You know, we go maybe a couple times a year or whatever, but you know, with the magazine and stuff, you're walking through the room and you're like, hey, I know him. Hey, what's going on? Hey, but also it's like coming home, you know, it's kind of weird, but it was a lot of fun and pretty exciting too, with all the big cash being around. It was a different air about it than last year. You know, it was a lot of money on the table and that was pretty exciting.
Yeah. And I bumped into one of our listeners who lives in Brandon here near in the Tampa Bay area. You just happened to be up there in a work plane. It's like, hey, Scott, how you doing? Had a little chat there at the ATM machine with him. He didn't offer me any of his money, unfortunately. I thought that's what he was flag me over for. But that's all right.
ATM is slang for urinal. No. I actually saw the conversation. You were at the ATM. I'm just joking.
But very nice gentleman as well too. But yeah, you're right. We just it does feel like home there. It's very nice.
Yep. And thing about I was talking about a little bit too before was big jump from last year's $880 buy-in, $5,000 buy-in this year. And of course the entries fell a little bit from 200 to 70, but the people who did show up, it was a quality 70. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
There were some high
profile. There were
no
Scott Longs or Chris Cassettis.
Yeah, no, we weren't making our way to that table. But Victor Ramden was there. Sean Deeb, who a lot of you will find out actually made the final table and went really deep. Tyler Smith, probably the best No Limit Hold'em tournament player on the planet right now. And Jason Mercier was there. John Reisner was around. So a lot of big names, a lot of good players, and just some really good quality play too. It was great to watch.
And obviously, when this hits the airwaves, people are going to love this because it's the Chad Brown No Limit Texas Hold'em Championship. And guess who finished in second, Chris?
Vanessa Russo.
That would be even almost as funny. No, Chad Brown.
Chad Brown.
He almost won his own freaking tournament.
He comes in second. Oh, man.
We already thought it was funny that he made the final table, and so he came back for the final table. We're like, so, you know, we're doing the pre-play interviews and stuff, and we're asking, you asked him, you know, hey, what's it going to be like to win your tournament since you and Vanessa seem to always win your tournaments? And he was like, hey, I want to win it. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what it sounded like to my ears.
Yeah, I mean, I was telling him, are you actually going to wear the bracelet that has your own name on it? I mean, you know, is it like an ID bracelet for you? And he's like, you know, and then he starts going into a story about something else that he won, you know, but I don't think he would have worn it. He may have worn it when he played in that event again next year, but, you know, a lot of these guys don't like to wear their stuff. They just think of it as a trophy, you know. So,
yeah.
But it was pretty funny. And it was a nice bracelet, too. It was by Madison Jewelers, our good friends at Madison Jewelers who help us out every year with our AUPT stuff. So,
yeah.
Nice, nice bracelet.
The bracelet for us this year.
Yep, they are doing another one for us. And here's a funny story, too. He loses heads up to Corey Commander Cool Burbick with a flush over flush cold deck at the end. And here's the thing. Now, this is funny because you and I can't be on TV at all during the actual playing of this. Otherwise, it's going to, you know, ruin the illusion that we're actually in a booth watching this thing. So we have to sit, like, way in the back. Well, because when you and I are sitting in the back, like, at least four of the players, all you can see is their back, you know? So I'm like, all right, so who's at the final table? And then people are like, well, Sean Deeb's at the final table. And we say, oh, we know who Sean Deeb is. He's, you know, he's world class, you know? And of course, Chad Brown, oh, we know him. He's world class. And they said, they got a couple other locals up there. We're like, oh, okay. And then they're like, this guy here is Corey. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we're looking at him, and I'm like, I don't know who Corey is, you know, by sight, because really, he's really an online pro, and he's got some live caches and stuff, but he's never actually had a live win. His biggest cache ever was like 33K. So to know him by face is not easy to do. So they never told us his last name. They just said Corey. So we're watching. When it gets down to like three-handed, you and I are like, so all right, we got to know who these guys' names are because we got to interview them. So they come over and they're like, well, it's Chad Brown and Corey Burbick. I'm like, Corey Burbick? That's Corey Burbick? And you're like, yeah, that sounds familiar. I'm like, yeah, it's Corey Burbick. And so I'm like, oh, my God, that's Corey Burbick, Commander Cool. So the whole time, that's when we're talking about the quality of players. This kid's in the field. We didn't even know it. And he takes it down for $100,000. And I was like, oh, my God, it made the interview so much easier, too, because then I knew who he was. I could start talking about his scoop title that he won on Stars and all this other stuff. So it's just hilarious how, you know, when you keep yourself quiet at the table and you don't have this huge persona and everything, you know, people might now know who you are, and you can get away with a lot more, too. And he actually alluded to that in the interview.
Yeah, absolutely. And, wow, and talk about amazing final table play, too. I mean, one of the laments of television tournament poker is that, you know, the crew can only be there so long, or you run into cost overruns and stuff. So a lot of tournaments will change the blind structure, make it almost ridiculous at the end. Or people are getting the final table with 12 big blinds.
Yeah.
This time, people got the final table. People had like 130 big blinds in front of them. And, of course, we were lamenting because this is exactly what could happen. We could be there all night, running into cost overruns, but it ended up all working out. But talk about a final table. I'm really looking forward to getting in post-production and watching actually seeing this since, like you said, we were like way back in the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, exactly.
Couldn't really follow it.
Exactly.
Because this is unlike what you normally see on tournament poker on TV. People with big stacks playing in a good tournament.
Yeah, luckily we'll have at least two shows to do this with too, so that it's not just the all-in hands. I mean, you might actually get to see some poker over a two-hour period, so that's really cool too. Unlike some productions where you have to do it over 1 week, and so that's kind of cool. And the other thing too that's exciting is part of our production with a third show is going to be the high-stakes cash game.
Yeah,
they called it the Jack's 50K, and it was a minimum 50K buy-in with 100, 200 blinds, and I'm pretty sure they had a $400 ante that had got to be paid by the button too. So that was. It was a pretty decent starting pot already when it first started. And I tell you what, man, the names in that final table, that feature table of that K, it was amazing. It was amazing. I mean,
absolutely.
Reisner, of course, one of our friends here from Tampa, finished second in the World Series, all that money he won. And Mercier, who will consider the best player on the planet right now. Tyler Smith, the best No Limit Hold'em tournament player right now. And then I even had a guy, Rick Raheem, which a lot of people, if they're big fans of the PokerStars big show on Fox, you know, the big game, he was on there, and he's like a multimillionaire. I think he's from Virginia, but he lives in Vegas too or something. But anyway, he's got a ton of money, and he loves to play any two cards, so that is going to be a lot of fun to watch, just seeing what hands he's playing and stuff. And actually, it was funny because we taped like, I don't know, a good 4 or 6 hours of this game, but then they went out into the main casino and played it too when the TV, you know, portion was over. They just kept playing all night, and very exciting stuff. Nice to see the big chips and, you know, and some big bets, and it's pretty exciting stuff, man.
Yeah, and just the see that kind of money on the table. Now, of course, it's Florida, so you're not allowed to play with money, so it's all chips. But
right,
knowing what that money stood for, $50,000 minimum buy-in. And we were driving home, I started adding up. I've owned probably 14 cars in my life, Chris. And I am not lying at all when I say you total up the amount I've paid for all 14 of those cars, and it doesn't hit 50,000. So all these players bought in at least for an entire Scott Long fleet of vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've owned 5 cars, and I know they haven't totaled up to that. But, it's incredible. And we were joking, too. Right next to the poker room, or not the poker room, but the actual facility, there's this RV place and, like, used RVs. And, like, one of the RVs had, like, $50,000 on it. Like, you could buy this for $50,000. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's an RV. There's a buy-in right there, that RV. Just cracking me up, man. It's some sick money. And really, I mean, it's on par with when you watch high stakes poker for the first few seasons, it was only 100,000. You could buy in for more, but it was a minimum of 100. And a lot of guys, when they rebuy, would rebuy for 50. So yeah. I mean, this is on par with what you see on TV. And these are big names. A lot of young guys too. I mean, Tyler Smith and Mercier and Racer. These are the guys of tomorrow. You know what I mean? They're going to be the ones on high stakes poker season 20, still playing and still having tons of money and being legends. So it was really good and a real big coup for Jacksonville. I thought it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. And the TV, 20 times better this year. I mean, take nothing away from what we did last year, but we just had a smaller budget to work with, so a smaller crew. This year, more money, and Kirk brought a much bigger crew. Did an amazing job, as always. And it's great, too, to hear, off the side, other conversations going on, and the pros and the other people talking about how great this TV production is. When you compare the fact that they're, ESPN and World Poker Tour and all these other Heartland Poker Tour people that have been doing it for a long time, that Kirk just puts together this crew that just people love. And coming down this year was Chicago Jason.
Yes.
He's a producer, and he's always a blast to hang out with, as the rest of the crew. But it was good to see him.
And you know what else, too, he contributed was the, a lot of times, you see the chip stacks and things like that, but he wrote like an algorithm or something some program to do the VPIP and all that stuff. So all those cool stats that you see on PokerStars shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now we got it. Voluntarily putting money into the pot and that kind of stuff and most aggressive player. We got that stuff for you now. So it's keeping on par with everyone else, and it's going to be a good show. New graphics and stuff. It's very exciting. I'm really looking forward to the post-production as well. And Chicago, like you said, Chicago Jason's hilarious. And I always have fun with him. And you got to play with him too, which is kind of cool. We'll talk about that a little later. But I didn't play with him. He's too good for me.
Well, he's too good for me as well too. But we're doing most of the fun work in post production. But we did have to do some on camera stuff while we were there.
Yes, we did.
After the cash game broke down, And consummate professionals, we are not, Chris.
Hey, you know what? If we ended it after one take, they would think we were geniuses.
That first take was golden. We were sitting there, we were going through, editing down the copy, and, you and I were just trying to figure out. It took us a while to figure out the right wording and cadence and everything. Camera rolled. Bam! Nailed it!
It was unbelievable.
And then we got all, cocky and stuff, and all downhill after that.
Okay, say it with me. Second annual Chad Brown, No Limit, Texas Hold'em Championship. See, it's not that hard to say when you don't have the camera on you. Second annual Chad Brown, No Limit, Texas Hold'em Championship. Look at that, I said it again, no problem. But when you're doing it with the camera and they're like, hello, welcome back to the Chad Brown, No Limit, Texas Hold'em Championship in Jacksonville. And it's like, wait a minute, no, it's not in Jacksonville, it's near Jacksonville, it's at Orange Park. By the time you say it all, I mean, the running joke this week was you wanted to try to tweet it, but it took up all the characters just with the title. It was hilarious.
Yeah, we get done with each take, and we're like, wow, that was good. We nailed it. I feel like Ron Burgundy. And someone said, yeah, you forgot that Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
You just said No Limit Hold'em Championship. What? No.
Or Chris, you added poker. Yeah. I mean, I'd be like, second annual Chad Brown, No Limit Texas Poker Hold'em Championship. They're like, it's not poker. I'm like, what? Did I say poker? I'm like, yeah. Damn.
And that's funnier because it's already a mouthful to begin with. We don't need to be adding random words in there to make it even more difficult. And then the whole time we're sitting there, we weren't really paying attention. We saw Chicago Jason back in the background talking to someone, and I just thought it was a member of the crew, and they're all laughing at us through the whole thing. They're taking side bets. Turns out it was Sean Deeb.
Sean Deeb sitting there mocking us. And he's like making prop bets with me that I'm not going to get the line out right. And I'm like, I'll take that bet. And he didn't pay me. He owes me $50.
And I felt bad because he was playing the next day in the tournament for $100,000, and we're there tripping all over our lines, holding up because he and Chicago Jason, when they got done with all this, went and did some hand analysis for the Windy City stuff. So we were keeping Sean Deeb up.
Yeah.
When he was playing for more money than we've ever had in our lives.
We're the reason he went out fourth, I think, or sixth, whatever it was. Yeah. So
he didn't say that, but I know he's thinking it.
Well, you can look for it on Comcast, right? We have a deal with all the Comcast networks in our area and all the way up to Chicago and other sports networks starting in April, right? It'll be in April?
Yeah. The first will be on April. And then, of course, we're going to be doing some fill-in hand analysis on the Windy City Championship. That will debut on March 2. And we will post all the times and networks and stuff when it's all finalized on our website. And, of course, we'll share them on the show here so you can catch it. And if you're a DirecTV or Dish customer, wherever you are in the United States, you can watch this as long as you have your regional sports package. And you get to watch it like 27 times that way because it's going to be on all the different networks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well worth the extra $5 a month, I think.
But one of the things that the tournament allowed us to do, since there was so much play at that final table, we didn't have to be there for much of it. So we got to play, which doesn't usually happen. Sometimes we're so busy with work and talking and schmoozing and all that we don't actually have time to actually go out into the room and sit down and play with the players and talk to them and stuff. But we did. We had to play a lot, actually, and actually almost closed the place the last night there. And we both won big, which never happens.
Never happens.
And what never happens on top of that is Scott wins big in No Limit Hold'em. What are you doing playing CNLHE, man?
Crappy No Limit Hold'em is my new game of choice, buddy. It was really sad, too, is, one of the great things about going to Arch Park is they get a variety of games going there, which is rare in Florida. They always seem to have a couple stud games going, a couple Omaha games going, and I get there, and when we first walked in that day, we had a work to do, but they had a 3-6 stud 8 game going.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, I'll play that, and then they started taking a list for 4-8 Omaha 8. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to love it here. So we finally get done with our work day, go over to play, and all those games are gone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to have to play 2-2 No Limit Hold'em? I don't know if I want to play this. I knew you did, and I wanted to play something. I'm like, all right, I'll donate. Sat down. Wow! Bought it for $200. I cashed out for $519. I still have no idea how that happened.
Well, you know what? I have to say this now because I didn't say it to you at the time you said it, but we're the last night we're there, Scott's like, yeah, I'm going to tell you before I tell my wife, I'm moving to Jacksonville. And I'm going to play No Limit Hold'em for a living. And I'm like, you know what? This is funny. This is a pretty cocky man who, by the way, picks up aces twice at my table, and they hold up both times. picks up ace-king like three times, flops top pair, top kicker, and has somebody, you know, call him the whole way with the second pair, second kicker. You know, he's making all this money, and he's like, you know, of course you're going to love it when you hit every hand, and every hand you have holds up, and you don't get any bad beats. Of course you're going to hit it and come home with $319 profit. One time you have your aces cracked, and that's it. You're like, that's why I play limit. But that didn't happen on this trip. Now all of a sudden he loves no limit. You were hitting the head, man. You were hitting the head with that deck.
Yeah, it was nice, and it helped that we had some players that were willing to donate above and beyond that too. But
yeah.
So I've turned into this amazing high stakes, no limit cash game player, and I felt like we were on not the set of the second annual Chad Brown No Limit Hold'em Texas Poker Championship, but on the set of Superman 2. You know, the end where General Zod and Superman, and he goes into the little booth where he loses all of his powers, but no, it's really switched, and General Zod loses all his powers. That's what I thought happened here.
See, now, I thought you were going to say on the set of Seinfeld when he talks about Bizarro World.
No, that's too new of a reference. I have to
Bizarro.
Go old school there.
Because, you know, the old school comic was Bizarro Superman. He was on Bizarro Planet and all that stuff, and they're the exact opposites. Okay, you went a different way with it. All right.
And so I became this cool, confident No Limit Hold'em player. And where did I see Chris? On the final night of our night there. He was shining his training wheels to a spit shine in the $1, $3 spread limit stud game. When that game broke, where did Chicago Jason and I find you? Toiling at the $1, $2 limit hold'em game.
It was actually a 1-1 limit hold'em. The blinds were $1, $1.
And I
closed them, too. I closed both tables. Every table I went to ended up breaking up. It was like the table would break. I have to find another one. And I break that one and go to – I broke like three tables.
Wow. I told you, it's completely a change of roles there. And I absolutely loved it. It was hilarious.
Yeah. And I never even – you know, when I was playing the limit hold'em, I would just play like suited aces and suited connectors. I wouldn't play anything else. If I had big pairs, I just called along. And then if it got too heavy, I got out because I knew I was beat. I just wanted to relax. I didn't want to be put to a test and all that crap. I just wanted to relax, so it was fun. I had a lot of fun. I played stud. I played stud 8. I played limit hold'em, and I played no limit hold'em. The only thing I didn't play was like Omaha because there were no seats for it.
You were a well-rounded player now, my friend. Well, you were there hanging out with the Wolford Brindley fan club. Jason and I were playing a 2-2 no limit, and we witnessed a litany of bad habits in the couple hours that we were sitting there playing, Chris.
Yeah.
So rather than just completely regale people with stories here, we'll have a little poker discussion here. One, we had a woman in the eighth seat who I think was the epitome of misplaced aggression. I always keep thinking back to years ago when we first started getting in this, and you remember when Ben Affleck was starting to get into poker, and he paid Annie Duke to teach him how to play, and Annie came out and said, you know, hey, Ben, you're trying to be aggressive, which is good, but you're doing it all the wrong time. You got to do it at the right time. And I'm like, wow, that's great advice. Well, this woman is not learned from Annie Duke yet, Chris.
Okay.
And she was just bold and in your face, I raise 40! And we all, woo, pull back. And it was always when she had, like, douche tray, and it was a coordinated board, and she kept getting schooled. So the advice for folks to remember is, yes, be aggressive, raise, re-raise, put the pressure on your opponent, but be sure you know when you're doing it, and it's the right time to do it.
Yeah.
This woman ended up going broke, and I was telling Jason right before it happened, I'm like, boy, I want that money. Those chips are mine. And some other guy got him, who was probably the next worst player at the table, so I'm like, that's right. If I couldn't get him, I'm glad he got him. I'll get him from him.
Yeah.
And she walked away, and then there was a guy at the table. Yeah, she's there all the time, every day, and she does the same thing. So, you know, it's probably better to be passive than aggressive in the wrong spot, I think.
I totally agree. I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to take their money.
You're to judge. You're over there just hanging at the 1-1 limit table. So, and then the table, too, that poor Jason was just brutalizing all night. And when I say brutalizing, it's not Jason's fault. I mean, it was this guy's fault. I don't know what he bought in for. I mean, it's a 40 minimum, 200 max at the 2-2 at this particular establishment. He was already at the table when we sat down. But for the rest of the night, Chris, he would go broke. He would peel off another 40. Yeah. Put it out there, go broke, put out another 40. He probably put $400 or $500 on the table, but he did it $40 at a time, and he just kept shaking his head. And the last time he did it, he had pocket queens, made a big raise, and when I say big as he could with the available stack he had.
Right.
And Jason said, "You know what? I'm going to call him with pocket fives." He flopped a set and busted the guy. The guy's just shaking his head. I can't believe he just threw out my day. Well, here's why it's not your day, sir. Because you don't have enough chips in front of you to protect your hands. If you had peeled off the whole 200 rather than five times peeling off 40, you would have been able to put a big enough raise in there to push Jason off his hand, protect those queens. But no, $40 at a time, you think you're limiting your risk, but you got to understand the limitations of when you do that as well.
Well, you know what, though? I'm going to play devil's advocate with you.
Excellent.
And I'm going to disagree with you. I think that the more chips he has in front of him with those queens, the more likely he is to get played with. And that's just how I'm – if the nation disagrees with me, please tell me. But
okay. No, I'll give you that.
Right? If you have queens and you have 40 bucks in front of you, everyone's going to – like, why, all I can win is 40 from this guy. But if he has 200 and I have pocket fives, I flop a set, I get his whole stack. You know what I mean?
I'm talking more about the raising, though. I mean,
I agree. But still, even $40, if you made it 40 to go in a 2-2 game, no one's going to call you, right? But if you had 20 in front of you.
But he was down to 26 at that point.
Yeah, but he could be down to 26 buying in for 100 and still not being able to protect his queens. I agree with you, though. I know what you're saying.
You could be low to that point. Yeah. I guess the point is, I mean, and I'm totally guilty of this back in my previous non-professional No Limit Hold'em days.
Monday?
48 hours ago, yes. I'd like to buy in light because I just didn't want to, be pushed off hands. I'm a limit player, and, you know, hey, you raise a 40? Well, that's what I have. Ha-ha! I'll see what happens. And it was just watching it. It's just not a way to play it, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
Not when you're willing to keep peeling off the 40s. If you want to take a $40 flyer, hopefully you double, triple up, and then you can play a game, that's different. But if you've got 400 in your wallet and you're going to put that 400 in play, I'm not saying you buy them for the max right away, but don't keep peeling off 40s.
No, I totally agree. And that happened, I was telling you, on the trip with me at Tampa Bay Downs. They used to have that 50-cent dollar game with a $20 minimum buy-in. Guys would get drunk and just keep putting 20s on the table, and then they would raise, and I would re-raise them to 20 because I had 500 in front of me from being there all night. Oh, it's 20 bucks, you know, and then you'd suck out on them, and they'd get mad, and they'd keep doing the same thing over and over again. And I think they really do think that if I just do it 20 at a time, I can limit my losses, but they don't understand is that they're not protecting their hand, like you said.
And you can still do it. There's still a strategy involved in doing it that way, but you can't be shaking your head upset when somebody flops a set against you.
Exactly.
I mean, you just got to understand what happens. I mean, and this guy just clearly didn't, and much to the benefit of all of us at the table, particularly Chicago Jason.
Well, I have my own call to floor, but I'll have to submit it to Jody and maybe use it on a future show to see what happened. I'm very interested to see what would happen if he were the foreman in this situation. Of course, you mentioned I played one 3-stud, spread stud game. I wanted to play the 3-6 stud game, stud 8 game, but it had broken up and no one was playing it. So I said, I'll try the 1-3. What the hell? You know, like I said, I want to just relax and see how people played this level. And I knew it wasn't going to be a very good play, but I sat down and bought in for 40, and I think I left with 55 or something. So it was nothing, you know, whatever. I won like 15 bucks. But there was one hand where I had split queens, and we were three-handed, and I had completed and got called in two spots. And one of the calls was with a king, but the guy never had – if he had kings, if he ever had a pocket pair, he always completed. And he didn't complete – He just called when the lady brought it in. So I knew he didn't have kings. So I completed just to try to get him out, but he wouldn't. So anyway, the next card was an ace, and he didn't have that much money in front of him. For him, it was an ace. For me, it was a four, and it made me I just had queens on this hand the whole way. I was telling you earlier that I made queens up, but I didn't. So I had queens, and he makes an ace, He checks. I bet. She calls. He calls. Then on the next card, he gets like a second club showing, but no pair still. And my next bet puts him all in. So I bet three. She calls. He calls. He's all in. Well, when it gets to the river, I look down at my card. I get the deuce of hearts. I don't improve at all. I just have queens. And they're like, okay. I said, I got queens. The lady folds. I'm like, all right, I'm going to win this big pot. I'm like, what do you have? Because he was all in. And he's, where's my seventh card? I'm like, what? He's like, I don't have my seventh card. And so his seventh card would have been my deuce of hearts, giving him nothing. And I didn't know he didn't get dealt it, because I'm looking at my whole cards as the dealer's dealing to see what I need for whatever. And when I look back up, you know, the card's flying at me. I don't know she didn't deal to him. So he's like, I don't have my seventh card. And I'm like, oh my God. So what do we do? So they call the floor over, and the floor says, what happened? And the dealer said, well, here's the cards. They're not in the muck. They're on the side, you know, the rest of the deck.
Your stub, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then so what happened was he was all in, and I wasn't thinking. And because he was all in and there was no action, I was thinking, for some reason, I didn't deal to him, and I dealt to this gentleman over here. And I'm like, hey, I'm no gentleman. So then she's so he's like, all right, well, the card's got to be random, so give him the next one off top of the deck. And I'm like, wait a minute. That's not random, because that's supposed to be my card, because she dealt to the woman, then me. But the guy was got two of hearts, you know what I mean? And it's like, but there's no way for me to tell him it's two hearts, because I could have just said, no, it's this card, not that card, because I already looked at it. It could have been one of my other whole cards. So he gives him my card instead. And it was a club, and it wasn't an ace or a king, but it gave him a flush. And I lost like what ended up being like a $40, $45 pot or something. And I thought, oh my God, there's the destiny thing, because that two of hearts was supposed to be his, and the nine of clubs was supposed to be mine, which would have gave me queens and nines and would have given him nothing. And I would have won a $40 pot and busted this guy. Instead, I lost, you know, what ended up being like 15 bucks out of my own money or whatever. I couldn't believe it. I didn't know what to do. Is that the right ruling, to give him my card, or do you shuffle the deck and give him a truly random card, because that's the card that I was supposed to get? You know what I mean? I don't know.
You know, I forgot to ask you. Was it easy to determine which card was dealt to you last?
Me,
or
yeah.
Did you already mix them into your?
But no, I knew which one it was, but no,
you
they
knew,
couldn't because I mixed them in.
Yeah,
I mixed
okay.
them in.
Because I would say if you knew which card was it and you hadn't looked at it yet, then they could make it right, which is the best thing to do.
Yeah, but they also could have said. You know, I could have looked at it, not known, because by the time they were discussing it and everything, but no, I had already showed my hand, because she's like, all right, turn them up. So we turned all our cards up, and at that point, I could have picked the card I wanted, and you can't do that.
Right.
So,
right.
Obviously, I couldn't do that to him. I knew it was a two of hearts, because that's deuce of hearts was what I got. But, yeah, no, they gave him my card, and it gave him a flush, and it kept him alive for a little longer, and I ended up losing 15 bucks there. I would have made a $30 profit instead of, you know, on the night or whatever, $40 profit. Instead, I ended up only winning 15 bucks.
Well, I guess here's the thing. I am certainly no Jody Russell, so we'll see what he says. But obviously, what's crappy about this is, you know, the last card you got,
right?
And you know that if he got that card, you would have won regardless of what card you got,
right?
So I don't think there's any way that they can rectify this where you would still be happy, unless it just happens the card they give him now, he doesn't win with.
Doesn't win, yeah.
Because you know, and this has nothing to do with you, this is the player in that situation. So at that point, I guess it doesn't really matter necessarily whether it's just the first card off the deck, which I actually think is probably the most efficient way to do it, or whether they just shuffle the deck and send him another card. I mean, if he still gets another club, you're still going to be just as upset.
Right, because I know there was no way he could win with the real card he was
supposed
to get.
Right, and he just wasted more time. You know, but I mean, this is what happens in a live poker room, and there's unfortunate stuff that happens, and it's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, if they could tell which card was the one they sent and they could make it right, then but at that point, I mean, really, you're just at the mercy of, you know, the dealer making a mistake and hoping that whatever card they give them, whether it's the next one off the top of the deck or shuffled or whatever.
Yeah.
Unless there's some hard line ruling where it was a player's responsibility to inform them that, hey, I didn't get my card,
right?
Which I don't think I've ever heard of, but so I don't know. So I guess I'm trying to make you feel better that I don't think there really was a way to make this better other than to do Superman and fly around the earth a couple times, back it up, and have her deal the card correctly.
Now here's the other thing too: is the guy. Now this is what really gets me mad, Scott. Now you talk about karma, and we always talk about poker karma and all that, right? The guy was just absolutely brutal to the dealer the whole time until this happened. Oh my God, she's back already? She's horrible. She's terrible. She always never ever fills me up. Never gives me my cars. And he just kept saying it louder and louder and making fun of this poor dealer.
Oh man.
Right? So I'm like, how bad can she be? Right? I mean, what you know? So and then I had won a couple of hands with her dealing, and I'm like, I love her. She's great. You know, she's dealing me. And then she does this to me, and he's the benefactor of it. This is the guy that was busting her chops, and he's the benefactor of her screw up. You know? And I didn't see him paying. So. I just thought, oh my God, how does he get rewarded after all that he was saying about her, you know? And I here I am telling her I love her, and she screws me, you know. But whatever, you know. But and I was totally, you know, professional about it, or whatever. I didn't swear or yell or whatever. I just couldn't believe that I lost that hand when I know I really won it. I really won that hand, and I didn't win it. How does that happen? You know, yeah. It just drives me crazy. So I will send it to Jody. I want to see what he has to say.
All right. Well, then finally we talked. We talked a little bit because we ended up playing next to each other in both of the sessions that we played, right. And then I played next to Shaggo Jason, and we talked a little bit later. You know, hey, should we be playing at the same table, or not? And my point was, you know, hey, I'm there for the social aspect. I'm just having fun. Obviously, I want to win. I want to, you know, double through. I want to win enough to get in that 50K game. But to me, I was just there for fun and just sitting next to you and talking about the hands or talking about what else is going on, watching the tournament on the screen or whatever. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. But you were making a point that maybe we shouldn't be at the same table.
Well, I just thought that, especially you and me, and the reason why we're in business together, we're going to a facility to do work, just so happens that we have some free time so we don't have to actually be doing work. But now we're sitting at the same table, and especially Nolan and Hold'em, where you had, at one point, I went on a wicked tear at the second session we had,
right,
and I was just
right.
Busting this guy on my left constantly. So I had like 500 in front of me, you had like 180, and I thought, you know what, if we got into a hand and I took 180 bucks from him, it could hurt the trip. You know, I mean, really, or the other way around, when we were at the other night, when you had 500 and I was on your left with $205, I thought, you know what, the last thing I need is a Scott deal me a cooler here. And to lose 200 bucks to Scott and then, like, be pissed off that we were playing against each other when we should be taking the other rube's money and not our own money. And Faso and I have had this discussion before, too, because one time, long, long time ago, when Poker Room was still on in America,
right, right.
I think I sat down at one of his stud tables or something, and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm playing. You're hanging out. I want to chat with you and stuff. He's like, yeah, but we shouldn't be taking each other's money. We should take everybody else's money. We're friends. And I'm like, you know, maybe he's right. I mean, the home game is different. We all agree that we're going to a home game. We're getting to play the different games and playing with our friends and socializing. And we can't really hurt somebody too bad in the home game, I guess. But you and I are in business together. We're friends. And we're going to be there for the whole weekend and have a five-hour drive back. And, you know, and it's not like we're millionaires where if we lose a $10,000 buy-in to each other, we laugh at it. You know, 500 bucks is a pretty decent amount of money in our lives. You know what I mean? So I thought it's just weird. And there was a hand at that table where I had the money and you had less than me where I felt like I think I might have had the best hand and I could have really taken your whole stack if I had gotten the card I wanted. And I thought, I don't want to take his whole stack in a way. I mean, I would take a stack and it'd be funny for the show and everything, but then you might be pissed at me. You know what I mean? And I just didn't know how to. I don't know. I don't know if we should play together or not. Like, on that, and at least in that scenario.
Yeah, I guess I don't really know the answer to that because until something like that happens, it's probably not a big deal. I mean, obviously, there's the other side of it from a player standpoint. I mean, I think the two tables we sat at, people enjoyed. Playing with us and asking about the magazine, what's going on in Florida, blah, blah, blah. But I got to think, I mean, there are people out there that when a husband and wife sit down at the same table, their radar goes up or something like that. So they see two people that know each other really well sitting next to each other playing. You know, are people thinking, it's the appearance of impropriety, even if there is no impropriety.
Right.
That hurts a little bit, too. So that probably factors into it.
And you know, by no means were we going soft. You know what I mean? Yeah. We weren't playing soft against each other, but I was just thinking to myself, oh my God, if I take this whole stack, what's it going to be like? You know what I mean? We weren't thinking together about this. Let's avoid each other. We never said that once. We never did anything like
right.
that. But I just wondered. And then I did wonder that as well. I wondered, they see Andy up on my shirt. They see Andy up on your shirt. All these guys are together. You know, are they colluding? And of course we're not. but I just, I don't know. I just, to me, I think we should avoid each other for that reason alone, too. We don't want to put the integrity of our magazine on if they think for some reason that I folded with the best hand so you'd have more money or vice versa or something like that. That's the last thing we need. We should probably avoid each other at the table. Avoid being at the same table, I mean.
Well, I know something else we should avoid, and that is staying in the same hotel room that has no hair dryer. Because, oh my golly, Adonis here's hair needed dried, and there wasn't a hair dryer to be found at the whole Courtyard Marriott, and I thought he was going to have to cry.
Luckily,
eventually,
I found it.
he digged through all these little drawers and cabinets and stuff until he found the hair dryer, and his mood changed dramatically.
Who puts the hair dryer in the bedroom part of a room when the bathroom is on the other side of the hotel? Who puts the – why would they put the hair dryer – why wouldn't they just put it in the bathroom? It's supposed to be in the bathroom.
They put it in a little baggie like it was a treasure or something.
Yeah.
So.
And they put it in the closet that's like 12 steps from the bathroom. You get out of the shower, you dry your hair, you look up, there's no hair dryer. Now you're expected to walk across the whole room to find the dryer, to go back into the bathroom to use it, which is where it should be. And there's plenty of places to put it in the bathroom. So I come out and I'm like, can you believe this? You're like, what? There's no hair dryer. Oh, I got longer hair than you. I mean, I'm going to be on TV today. Am I supposed to have, like, this, you know, stupid hairdo for television? You know, my God. I'm not Vince Van Patten. I don't have a whole crew doing my hair when I get to the set. I got to do it myself. So I need a hair dryer.
Oh, man. Oh.
And I always say to myself when I'm packing, do I need to pack a hair dryer? No. There'll be one in the hotel room. Same when we go on the cruises. Do I need to pack a hair dryer? No. The steward will give me one. All right. And then when we get there, like, there's no hair dryer. I'm like, I should have packed it.
Well, the cruise, I'm not sure whether they let you pack them. I know they don't.
No, I know they don't. They don't. But they give you one, I guess.
So you're gonna have to drip dry there, buddy.
They give you one on the cruise.
Go out on the front of the deck and just let the wind blow it dry.
I'm the king of the world.
And man, it was just not your day that day, Chris.
No, it wasn't.
Your hair is soaking wet. You had to go around. You finally completed the treasure hunt, found your hair dryer. Then we go downstairs to breakfast, the made fresh omelet station. And you order, I order, we sit down, and they bring over yours first and put it down on the table, and you're like, ham.
Not only ham.
I mean, are we playing word association here? Or what's going on? You're like, there's ham in my omelet.
And peppers. Order. There were peppers in the omelet, too. Lady says, would you like an omelet? I said, yes, please. Okay, we want cheese. And I said, no, I would just like mushroom in my omelet. That's it. Egg and mushroom. She's like, okay. I go and I get my little Special K box, the little mini box. And I like holding those in my hands. That makes me feel like I'm a giant, you know.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
And then you get the little 2% milk like you get in grade school, you know, for 7 cents. And then I get my banana or whatever, and I walk over there, and she's like, here's your omelet, guys, and ham. what is ham doing? And then, oh, what's this green stuff? I didn't order anything. Do you have green mushrooms? What is this green? Oh, peppers. Ham and peppers in my burnt omelet that I didn't ask for. And I'm like, I'm just going to eat it. Screw it. I don't know where that came from, why she did that, but I just ate it. And then she brought yours over. Yours was fine.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I was laughing at you, and I'm like, man, come on. Yeah, it's ham. You can live with it, right? So she drops mine down, and I'm like, ham. I wanted bacon, green pepper. I didn't order ham in my omelet. I got ham in my omelet. So apparently, Chris, this omelet lady has a wicked ham fetish. It's one of those, I know you didn't want ham, but you got to try the ham. You're going to thank me for this. I'm going to put a lot of ham in this. And you're going to eat it, and you're going to walk out and say, that is the place to get a ham omelet.
It's hard to stay kosher at the Marriott Courtyard. Unbelievable, yeah.
Mine was still good, though, even with the ham in it. But, she apparently, she loves the ham.
Yeah, well, the next day I made sure to avoid the omelet station. Just went over to the pre-made, you know, whatever those are, scramblers, you know, egg, scrambled egg thing that they got going on over there. I just grabbed a little eggs out of there, and I knew I wasn't going to get ham in that. So I just had regular scrambled eggs, no mushroom for me, and definitely no ham at all, so. But that was good. It was a good trip, right? I mean, it was one of our better trips, I think, as far as, you know, meeting people and contacts and just doing the show. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a lot of good content and stuff that we'll bring to the PokerCast in the future. And, of course, we'll be happy to see the final product on TV and let everybody know that so they can mock us endlessly.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Auntie Up.
All right, well, your long national nightmare's not over yet, Chris.
Oh, no.
Because our hand of the week this week comes from the quality game of Omaha Hilo.
Oh, man.
Omaha Airbender. I know you felt really bad that you played all the other games in existence this week, didn't get a chance to play Omaha, so here's your chance to play Omaha.
Oh,
don't say,
man.
I'm not a giving person.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, it comes from our longtime friend Godar.
You almost called him our long friend. I wouldn't even know what that meant.
Yeah, not privy to that. But, you know, we used to call him previously known as Godard. You know, until he corrected our pronunciation. But Godar. And so this was in a 8-game mix tournament on Poker Stars, our great sponsor.
Right.
A $2.20 tournament. And obviously we're in the Omaha 8 level. And remember, it's an 8-game mix, so it's six-handed, right?
Yes.
All right, and this is in level 3, 30-60. So not a lot of big change in the chips. Everybody is roughly around the 2,000 mark where they started, except one player who has half his stack.
All right.
I don't know if he misplaced it in the couch cushions or, you know, maybe something the omelet lady took it and put it in some omelets or what.
She invested in ham.
Yeah, yeah. But it's missing right now, all right? Okay, so we have a caller under the gun from that player. And now we look down, Chris, at King of Clubs, Four of Clubs, King of Diamonds, Five of Spades. Remember, this is Omaha 8 or better, high-low. What do you do with your action?
It seems like it's pretty early on, right? This is the first run-through, so I'll...
Level 3.
Yeah, I'll just call. I'm not going to raise here. Although I think you might raise. I don't know. In the home game, I think you'd raise with this hand. But I'm probably just going to call in a tournament setting like this early on and see if I can, you know, catch a set or maybe make a wheel or something. You know, and plus we're suited, I think, right? The king clubs, four clubs. So
yes.
Yeah. So I mean, that's not the nuts, but I don't like this hand, to be honest with you. But I think I'll call just for the drama of the hand here.
Just for the giggles.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're right. In the home game, I would raise here. In any other situation, though, I'm folding here. This is a crappy hand.
Yeah. You know,
it's a hand that gets people in trouble in Omaha. Because you're like, oh, I've got a pair. I've got a flush draw. Well, your pair is the second best pair.
Yeah.
Your flush draw is the second nut flush draw.
Yeah.
And you're low. You could back into it. But there's not a lot of chimes that 5-4 are going to win the low.
Right.
And if you do, sometimes they're probably going to chop it because there's going to be a lot of low cards on there and everybody's going to have wheels. I just don't, there's really not a lot much I like about this hand. If I'm in the big blind and it's raised once and it calls me one more and there's a bunch of people in, sure, I'll take a flyer. But we're under the gun plus two. We're also way out of position for a hand like this. You know, I know it's only 30 and we've got 2,085 in chips. I'm just going to hold on to those chips and wait for a better time.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I was letting you say it. Because I knew you would.
I was letting you say it.
I knew you would know more about why to say it, but I probably would have folded this as well. I just don't, you know, for 30 bucks, 30 units, whatever. Yeah, maybe it's worth taking a chance at it once. But you're right. You're at risk, and the one thing you don't want to do is make the second best hands in split games like this. Same thing with stud eight. You don't want to be the second best both ways, and that's what this could easily lead to. So I probably would have folded it. Maybe I would have called it if I was feeling frisky. But yeah, you're right. Second best both ways is terrible, so I would probably get out of the way if it was much later in the tournament or if we're in the home game, we're playing for cash. I don't know. I may have let it go.
All right. Well, our hero Godar says he doesn't like raising without an ace. That's very good, Godar. He says, but the pair flush draw and two low cards seem worth taking a flyer. All right. It's worth taking a flyer, but this is the key.
Hit it hard.
In this phrase. Worth taking a flyer. Got to hit it hard.
Got to hit it hard, yeah.
If you don't hit it hard, then it's not a flyer anymore. It's swirling down the drain.
It's a sinker.
Yes. All right, so he calls. We get two more calls. The small blind folds. So everybody in here but the small blind as the big blind checks. So five-handed to the flop. And we see tray of clubs, deuce of spades, nine of hearts. So we're open-ended. And it's checked from the big blind, and the first player under the gun bets. Action is on us now.
I'll call. There's a lot of money out there to call. I can't raise here because, really, think about the hand you're up against. You know, I mean, somebody could have ace four, and they got the nut low, and they're looking for a wheel, nut low draw. And, you know, set is very possible here. Two pair is very possible here because people love to play ace, deuce, tray, or even deuce, tray open for an ace swap.
And right, yep.
So I'm just going to call, and maybe I'll make my straight. And even if, you know, maybe I'll make my wheel, and then I know I have the nut low and the straight. So I'm just going to call. Raising, I don't think, really accomplishes it. I don't think you're going to get anybody to fold if they have the pieces of this that they likely could have in this kind of a game. So I'm just going to call.
Yeah, you know, again, this is what happens. We took a flyer. And we got a little bit of this, enough to be tempting. So we want to be careful we don't get sucked down the drain here. So, you know, I might be willing to take a call once. You know, it's tough to not know where the table is. Is this an action table? If it's going to get raised and stuff before it gets back to us, I'm not sure I'm going to want to. I'm fine just probably folding here. I didn't hit my set. I didn't flop a flush or something crazy like that. You know, raising, yeah, you're right. I don't know. I don't know what you're going to get out of that. Unless maybe it's you find out that it's raised and re-raised and you know you're hopelessly behind.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be worth the effort at this point.
No. I think I would call and hope that people call along or fold and not raise. And if they raise and if I'm priced in, that's one thing. But if it's, you know, if it's like capped or something, forget it. So I would rather just call here and take my chances to see what I'm up against after that, and then if it comes back to me with a bunch more bets, maybe I get away from it.
And I tell you, if I call here, I'm going to have to really improve on the turn. I'm not going to, you know, put another 60 in here hoping to draw.
Yeah.
To the second nuts or something like that on the river. So.
Right.
All right, well, our hero, Godard, says, he says, when you have kings and low cards, aces or double-edged swords, hear to that. Says they help your low hand but hurt your high hand. Here I'm drawing to a straight, a non-nut low, and also have a made pair. Says I think the combination of all these factors make it worth a raise, even though I'm not sure whether I want to make my straight or want my pair to hold up. Yeah, I'm not sure about either one of those either, buddy.
Well, the other thing, too, is he's saying pair hold up as if he's still ahead. How would he know he's ahead here? There's no way to even know if your pair is good now. So
yeah, and how many times does a pair win in Omaha 8? Very rarely.
Well, what did he do, though, when they bet 30.
Oh, I'm finishing his thought process here.
Okay.
Says he does not. I do know that an ace would be amazing. Well, yeah, that would give us the nut straight and the nut low. So that would be the card we'd be looking for.
Right.
So he decides to raise. Chris makes it 60 to go.
Yeah.
Pushes somebody out. And then is re-raised to 90. Big blind calls. The initial bettor caps it at 120.
Oof.
And back to us.
Oof. All right, well, we obviously are behind here at this point, so I don't know.
Hopelessly behind, I think.
That's a lot.
Well, not hopelessly, but pretty close.
Not hopelessly, because you can make the nuts. Not going to be hopeless.
Right.
But yeah, we're behind.
But we'll put another 60 in here for an ace. And remember, we've got five people in the hand.
Another 90, right? You said it's capped.
Oh, yeah,
true.
Right? Sure. No, we raised. Remember, we raised a 60. So it's
We raised a 60, yeah. Okay, so yeah, so another 60. Yeah. Well,
and remember, we've got five people that started the hand. We've lost 1 since then. There's probably a better than average chance that there's already aces in people's hands. Uh-huh. How many, we don't know.
Right.
So if we're in this hand to hit an ace, I got to assume that two of them are gone right now. Maybe more. So now I'm down to a two-outer for the most part. I mean, there's some other combinations where we could win here. You know, a six would give us a straight as well, too, but not the low. You know, it's half of the pot. I don't know. Another 60?
Let's look at it this way, though. 120 and 30 from the first is 150. We started with about 2,100. We still have about 2,000 when this end, at this point, if we call it. If we make our straight, it's a huge pot. We're probably getting 10 to 1 on our money there or so, I would think. So I probably open in a straight draw, possibly making the nuts. We are drawing to the nuts. Even though they have an ace in their hand, probably we are drawing the nuts. I probably am going to call at this point since I raised. If I had made it 30 and it came back to me at 120, and then the pot wasn't as big because other people got out or something, maybe I do fold. But I'm still drawing to the nuts here, and I still have an overpair, which probably isn't good. But I have the nuts.
Probably not. No.
Drawing the nuts both ways, too. I mean, you could make the nut six high straight and a wheel for the low. You know what I mean? So for in the grand scheme of things, if the next card's really scary and then it gets all out of whack again, maybe I get out of the way.
Fold, yeah.
Or if I get counterfeited. So, but for really, for 60 more units at this point, and I'll still have 1,950 left or whatever it is, I'm going to call. Gotcha. You know, I just didn't like raising, though, before that.
Yeah. See, I mean, we would have saved ourselves 30 here by not raising there. We'd let somebody else do the raising.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we make the call, of course, and the player, two players behind us also call. So we only lost one four-handed going into the turn for the six of diamonds. So our board now is a tray of clubs. Deuce of spades, nine of hearts, six of diamonds. We have the nut straight right now. We have a low. It's probably not this low.
Is this the time when you say your new catchphrase?
Ricky Ticky Tabby.
Because that is the only card that we want other than the ace. I mean, at least now we have the nuts. We have the nuts. And if other people have ace four and they're going to get quartered, we're going to get a lot of money out of this. So.
Yeah, we still got one level to go, and we don't have the low. I'd actually prefer the ace here because then we're guaranteed to have the nut low regardless of what happens to the river. So we know we're getting some money back. Plus, the ace probably is pairing other folks. We might have improved to the only person with the nut low at that point.
Right.
And we also have a nice high. I mean, the ace is probably a good card on the road to scooping this thing. We're the six. Obviously, I think we have the nuts now on the high. Probably unlikely that anybody else has the same high, so we've got the high right now, but we still got to fade a river to see the high.
Right.
And we're probably splitting the pot here because there's probably somebody with an ace four. But maybe not, you know. But I would think when that flop comes, with that kind of action, there's an ace four out there.
Yeah. No, I think that we're in a good – I think we're in good shape now. Really, only cards that scare us are middling cards now that make somebody a higher straight, but would they really be around with – say, like, if a seven comes, somebody really be around with an 8-5 in their hand at this point with all this raising and calling and everything. So there's no way. So I really think we're in good shape as long as we don't get counterfeited somehow or whatever to have at least a high in this. So I like this hand now. I mean, I'm glad we took the flyer, and I'm glad we called the extra 60. And now
don't
I'm happy.
Encourage it, Chris.
I'm not. Normally, you should probably get away from this hand earlier on.
Don't tap with the glass.
But I like it. I like this hand, and I'm going to bet it if I get my opportunity, so...
All right, well, the big blind checks. The initial bettor who capped the action last time bets out, and our hero says, not gin exactly, but good. Let's call it vodka. After my raise, I get a cold call. Oh, I'm sorry. And then we...
Well, obviously you raise this now because you said that. So. But, yeah, I agree with the raise. Of course, you have the nuts, and you want to thin the field, and you want somebody else sucking out on you with something else, you know, with some random two cards or counterfeiting you somehow and making a better low or something. You know what I mean? Some weird... combination of that. I would bet it. You got the nuts. Bet the nuts. So I'm happy with the raise.
All right. Well, a hero does raise. We get a call. The big blind gets out of the way. The initial bettor re-raises us again. We can cap it. Do we want to cap it?
Well, my big fear is that this guy has ace 4-5 in his hand. So that he's got us with the low, and we're getting quartered for the high. So... I don't know. I guess I call and see if we get one other caller in here to try to get more money in, because someone is going to have a different hand than us. So if we can get enough money out of them, even if we got quartered, we might still make money on it. So
yeah, because remember, if you do squeeze the other guy out, you'd rather have that money than the money that you know where you go that's already in that you're more scared about.
Yeah, I think I'll just call.
All right. Well, that's what our hero did, and we did pick up the last customer. Three-handed to the river. And our hero back to where his commentary says after his raise, he gets a cold call and a re-raise. probably looking at a nut low somewhere. Yep, I would definitely say that. I said thinking of a strong possibility that the initial better has a straight and an ace. See? Look at you.
Yeah, wow. That's weird.
Think of the same way. we could be whipsawing, or it could be whipsawed for half the main and none of the low. Yep. And he sides the hedges bet and not scare a player behind him by just calling the re-raise.
Yeah, that's smart. That's smart. It's smart
totally
because
in tune with
it's smart because we said that's what to do. No, but really, I mean, it's weird because I don't know these comments. You know what I mean? I'm just telling you what I'm thinking, and it's the same thing. So it makes sense then. If he's thinking that way and we're thinking that way, then it's got to be the right thing to do. Don't raise again there.
All right, three-hander of the river, which is the seven of diamonds. Our final board is the tray of clubs, deuce of spades, nine of hearts, six of diamonds, seven of diamonds. So our straight is potentially compromised now. We didn't prove our low. And the guy who's been betting and raising the entire way bets out again.
Yeah, I don't think that seven hurts us. I really don't see somebody with 8-5 in the hand still at this point, unless they had ace, 4-5-8. You know what I mean? But other than that, that's the only hand I'm really afraid of is ace, 4-5-8. So, and somebody, you said the guy bet? Did you say the guy bet?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I'll call. You know why? Because, like he said, we could be. It's possible somebody has ace 4-5. So, right. why risk losing more money and getting quartered? So I'm just gonna call.
Yeah, this is one of those where I'm happy to get what I get out of it. And again, by raising, we might scare out the person in the middle who we're not necessarily scared of. I'm not so much scared of the guy behind me. I'm scared of the guy who's been betting and raising the entire way. So if we just call here, more likely that we're gonna get his money in there. And it might help us make a little bit more. And, you know, I don't want to be scared of the monsters under the beds, obviously, here. But this player has been playing so strong the entire way.
Yeah.
And it's entirely possible that he has the ace 4-5.
You know, if you're playing Hold'em, that's one thing. You're going to bet this to the end and bet big because there's no way the guy at the end playing Hold'em has 8-10. So you know for sure, and because there's no flush draws, and that's one thing. But this is Omaha 8, and everybody plays all kinds of cards. And the other thing, too, is he just said before something like it was a strong possibility that he might be getting whipsawed for half the main and none of the low.
Right.
So if he's thinking that, if he was actually thinking that during the hand and not this isn't post-mortem, then he needs to call here. So I would just call.
Yeah, and remember in our power tips from the 8-game mix a couple weeks ago, watch out for the second nuts both ways.
Yes, yes.
And
that's
exactly
in the show.
What we have here. Yeah, actually, we have the third nuts on the high now and the second nuts on the low. I don't think we want to be raising here and getting into a position where we have to call more raises.
Yep, no, I totally
find
agree.
Out that we have nothing or a little bit of the pot.
I agree, and I think that a call is in order.
All right, well, our hero deviates from us finally, Chris. Raises to 120. Player in the middle calls our initial better, raises it again, comes to us. We raise again and cap it. The guy in the middle calls.
Wow.
And, of course, our main aggressor here calls as well, too. At this point, I'm starting to shake a little bit, Chris.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Really thought we had the guy in the middle beat, but you know now the best we can hope for is they both had ace four with no high.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, I mean, if somebody had ace four here, they're not going anywhere on that turn. And if they just happen to have the other two cards or a combination that made this straight with the seven, boom, you're in trouble now. You're in real trouble.
Yeah, ace 4-5-8 crushes you, and you win nothing. You win zero. Oh, man, there's no way I'm raising in this pot.
God, all right, well, our hero says an unlikely higher straight got there, but nothing else changes. He feels like he's guaranteed a portion of the pot.
Guaranteed?
Feel that way.
One card will go. You were strong possibility you were getting whipsawed. There's a chance of it. Now you're guaranteed half. Wow.
Guaranteed is a strong statement. I say I'm likely to get a portion here, but I'm not not going with the 30-day money-back guarantee on this hand.
Yeah, guarantee is as strong as Scott using hopeless 15 minutes ago when we make the nut straight on the next card.
He says he has a calling station on his left, so I'm content to get as much money in as possible and see what happens. He says, as it turns out, my opponents have no idea what they're doing. Says that this won't happen in apes unless you're up against a Russian who won a free roll.
Oh, so I'm taking he won the hand.
Which I guess is a point to be made. I mean, you know, in your competition, normal $2 tournament, there are all kinds of people could be playing crazy stuff here.
Yeah.
Whereas in Apes or a higher limited tournament, going to the mat with the second nut low and the third nut high is probably not smart.
Wow.
All right, well, at showdown, our two opponents muck their hands.
Oh, my God.
We scooped this bad boy. If we look at the hand history, the gentleman that was pushing the action the entire way had the four of diamonds, tray of spades, eight of diamonds, nine of clubs.
Wait.
Yeah, we'll pause and wonder
what
that is. Oh, boy.
Four, three, eight. So he had two pair.
Two pair on the flop.
He flopped two pair and went the whole way with it.
The weak low draw.
And a weak low. Wow.
Our the guy in the middle, who we thought was weaker, had the ace of clubs, the deuce of diamonds, the deuce of clubs, and the six of hearts.
So he flopped a set. And then had the six as well later.
And then his low draw got killed on the turn.
Yeah.
And then was hoping just for a live ace on the river, which is what he got.
Wow. Oh, man.
Godard, that's what I say, the dancing between the raindrops kind of hand there. If you would have given me odds on scooping that pot on the river, I would have... I would be broke right now.
Well, here's the deal. Scott, you did a throwback to Superman 2. I'll do a throwback to Top Gun. And Cosine Charlie comes up and says, well, we see that Maverick had made this move, and it succeeded. But I think that in the analysis, we have proven that it was the wrong thing to do, and he got lucky.
Yes.
So pretty much that's what happened here. I think that raising on the end is crazy. What?
Let's go play volleyball.
I have the need for saying goodbye. The show is over. Thanks, Godard. That was a great hand.
Yeah, it definitely gives you a lot of lessons on it. And, hey, the best lessons are the ones where you win the money as well.
Yes. That always helps. That way you can learn from it and profit from it.
Oh, Godard knows he has no swag coming to him. He's a previous swag winner. But email your hand of the week to podcast@antiyachtmagazine.com, and we'll be happy to send you some great quality merchandise, like a T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerwear.com.
Congratulations to Corey Burbick for winning the – ready? Say it with me. Second annual
Chad Brown No Limit Texas Hold'em Championship. River Championship.
Poker Championship. Oh, my God. Another good show. Glad to be back. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
It's February 4th, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker.
I'm sorry. What happened? I'm sorry.
That's a record for Easter eggs. Jesus.